In all the years I've been practicing functional medicine, I have never seen an autoimmune case where stress was not part of the story. Not once. Not the patient with lupus who insisted that her life was fine. Not the patient with Hashimoto's who had been managing brilliantly. Not the patient with rheumatoid arthritis who was convinced the trigger was purely genetic. In every case, without exception, when we looked at the history carefully, when we mapped the timeline of symptoms against the timeline of life events, when we tested the stress physiology directly, stress was there. Sometimes it was obvious, a bereavement, a breakdown, a period of sustained pressure that preceded the first symptoms by months. Sometimes it was subtler, years of low-grade chronic load that had normalized so completely that the patient didn't even experience it as stress anymore, just life, just how things were. But it was always there in one form or another. This episode is about why. Not as an observation, not as a hypothesis, but as a matter of established science. Science that has been accumulating for decades and that, in my view, should be at the center of how we understand, manage, and treat autoimmune disease. It isn't, and that needs to change. Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, author of the book Optimal You, and founder of the Good Health Clinic. If you are living with an autoimmune condition, this episode is especially for you. Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, celiac disease, psoriasis, inflammatory bowel disease, Sjogren's, whatever your diagnosis, the mechanisms I'm going to walk through today are relevant to your picture. Because autoimmunity at the biological level is not 10 different diseases. It is one dysregulated immune system expressing itself at different target tissues. And the stress connection, the relationship between the physiological burden of chronic stress and the onset, severity, and trajectory of autoimmune disease is not a soft story. It's a hard scientific story with decades of research behind it. And it has profound implications for how you manage your condition. If you are a practitioner listening, I hope this episode gives you language and evidence for a conversation that is genuinely difficult to have well in a standard consultation. Because manage your stress said in 15 minutes with no mechanistic context is not the same thing as what we're going to talk through today. So let's go through this properly. Psychoneuroimmunology, it's a long word, but it doesn't need to be a complicated concept. Psycho means the mind, the psychological experience. Neuro means the nervous system. Immunology means the immune system. Psychoneuroimmunology is the science of how these three systems communicate with each other. The mind, the nervous system, the immune system. How what happens in your mind and your nervous system changes what happens in your immune system, and vice versa. It emerged as a formal field of science in the 1970s and 80s. When researchers really began demonstrating something that had been observed clinically for much longer, that psychological states have measurable, reproducible effects on immune function. Not metaphorical effects, not feeling stressed makes you more likely to make poor choices, but direct cellular, molecular effects on how immune cells behave. The first body of evidence, stress changes immune gene expression. So studies using a methodology called genomic profiling, looking at which genes are being switched on and off in immune cells, have shown that chronic psychological stress produces a consistent and reproducible shift in immune gene expression. Specifically, genes associated with pro-inflammatory responses are upregulated. Genes associated with antiviral immune responses are downregulated. This means that under chronic stress, the immune system becomes simultaneously more inflammatory and less effective at fighting infection. Both directions of dysfunction, the overactivation that drives the autoimmunity and the underactivation that leaves you vulnerable to pathogens, are present at the same time. This is not a theoretical risk. This is a measured molecular change in immune cells. The second body of evidence, stressful life events often precede autoimmune onset. So there is now substantial epidemiological literature on the relationship between stressful life events and the onset of autoimmunity. Multiple large-scale studies have found that people who experience significant stressors, so things like bereavement, divorce, job loss, serious illness in a family member, sustained occupational stress, they have meaningfully higher rates of subsequent autoimmune diagnosis. One Swedish study that I find particularly compelling followed people who had been diagnosed with stress-related disorders, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, acute stress reaction, adjustment disorder, and compared them against siblings without those diagnoses and against matched general population controls. the people with the stress-related disorders had a significantly higher incidence of autoimmune disease in the years that followed. 41 different autoimmune conditions. And that association held across all of them. And that's why we sometimes say it doesn't really matter which diagnosis you've got. It's more important whether you've got autoimmunity. So that's not an association between stress and one autoimmune condition. This is an association between stress and autoimmune disease as a category. The immune system does not distinguish between Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis when it comes to the effect of chronic stress dysregulation. It responds to the physiological burden of stress, and the autoimmune consequence takes the form that that individual's genetic and environmental vulnerability determines. So you will get the autoimmune disease that you are genetically and environmentally vulnerable to. And then the third body of evidence, stress reliably worsens established autoimmune disease. So beyond onset, the evidence that stress drives disease activity in established autoimmune conditions is extensive and consistent. Patients with things like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, inflammatory bowel disease, to name just a few, have the most robust literature around this. They show measurable increases in disease activity following periods of psychological stress. Flares correlate with stressful life events. Remissions correlate, on average, with periods of lower physiological stress load. And this is not patients reporting that they feel worse when they feel stressed. This is objective disease markers, antibody titers, C-reactive protein, inflammatory cytokines, MRI lesion activity. These are showing measurable deterioration following documented stressors. The implication is important. If you have an autoimmune condition and your disease activity fluctuates in a way that seems to track with your stress level, you're not imagining it. You are observing a real, mechanistic, well-documented biological relationship. And if your care team has not discussed this with you in any depth, that's a gap. Not in your perception, but in your care. Let's have a look at three mechanisms of how stress drives autoimmunity. Understanding that there is an association and that that exists is one thing. Understanding the mechanism, so the why and the how, is what makes that evidence clinically useful. If we understand the mechanism, we can interrupt it. We can interrupt it, and then we have something to offer. So there's three primary mechanisms through which chronic stress drives and perpetuates autoimmune disease. And they're interconnected, so they're mutually reinforcing. All of them are addressable. And that's the really important key thing here. All of these things we can do something about. So mechanism one, HPA axis dysregulation and immune miscalibration. So we covered the HPA axis in depth in the last episode. So I'll build on that here rather than repeat it. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, I recommend jumping back and watching last week's episode and the one before. The key point in the context of autoimmunity is this. Cortisol is, in normal function, an immune regulator. One of its critical roles is to prevent the immune response from overshooting, to apply the brakes when the inflammatory response has done its job and needs to resolve. In chronic stress, two things happen that undermine this regulatory function. First, immune cells become resistant to cortisol signaling. That's a process called glucocorticoid resistance. The brakes stop working as effectively. The immune system, particularly the inflammatory arm of it, becomes less controllable. Second, the cortisol curve itself becomes distorted, so either chronically elevated or blunted, sometimes flatlined, depending on the stage of HPA axis dysfunction you're at, and we can test for that. And it's just a simple slivery test. And neither pattern provides the immune system with the reliable, rhythmic, regulatory input that it needs. So the consequence is an immune system that is prone to dysregulation in both directions, prone to overactivation and inflammation, and prone to loss of tolerance, so the ability to distinguish self from non-self, your own tissue from outside influences. And a loss of tolerance is, by definition, the foundation of autoimmunity. You might recognize this in your experience, as your condition has been significantly harder to manage during stressful periods, or flares that you cannot trace to any obvious dietary or emotional trigger, but that you notice tend to follow periods of sustained pressure. A sense that when your stress is low, you feel as though the condition is more manageable. When it rises, everything feels more destabilized. Then we have mechanism two. This is stress, gut permeability, and the autoimmune trigger. We established in the last two episodes of the podcast that chronic cortisol directly increases gut permeability. And if you haven't listened to those yet, again, I recommend jumping back and having a listen to those. In the context of autoimmunity, This matters in a specific and particularly important way. The current leading model for how autoimmunity is initiated proposes that three conditions need to be present simultaneously: a genetic predisposition, an environmental trigger, and increased intestinal permeability. The gut permeability is the gateway. So without it, the genetic predisposition and the environmental trigger may not be sufficient to initiate that autoimmune cascade. With it, the door is open. Environmental triggers for autoimmunity include things like infection. So certain viral and bacterial infections are well established as autoimmune triggers. The latest one that's come through is Epstein-Barr virus, EBV, as a trigger for things like multiple sclerosis. But they also include things like food antigens. So particularly gluten is in genetically susceptible individuals. That can be a real problem. And bacterial endotoxins coming from the gut. When the gut lining is compromised, these substances enter the bloodstream, the immune system mounts a response, and in individuals with relevant genetic predisposition, molecular mimicry can occur. So this is when the immune system confuses the body's own tissue with the foreign substance it's responding to. So the molecular structure is similar in your own tissue and the foreign substance, and the body can mistake the two. So it will begin attacking both. Chronic stress increases gut permeability. Increased gut permeability increases the likelihood of autoimmune triggering in susceptible individuals. This is not in everybody. This is in those who are susceptible to autoimmune diseases. And this is not a speculative chain. Each link is supported by substantial research. And you might recognize this in your own experience. Your condition maybe began or significantly worsened following a period of stress that coincided with an infection or a change in diet or a course of antibiotics. The stress alone doesn't cause the autoimmunity, but it's opening the door through which that trigger can walk. And then we have mechanism three. Stress hormones directly modulate immune cell behavior. The third mechanism, this one is perhaps the most direct, and it's the one that I think probably receives the least attention and a lot less attention than it deserves in the clinical conversation about autoimmunity. Immune cells have receptors for stress hormones. They're directly responsive to adrenaline, noradrenaline, cortisol. And this means that every time your stress response activates, every significant cortisol or adrenaline release, immune cells receive and respond to that signal. The research on what that signal does to immune cell behavior in the context of chronic stress is consistent and also concerning. It shifts the balance of the immune response from regulatory and anti-inflammatory towards pro-inflammatory and dysregulated. It specifically suppresses regulatory T cells, which are the immune cells whose job it is to maintain tolerance, so to prevent the immune system from attacking the body's own tissue. They are regulatory. They are managing that tolerance level of your immune system. And with stress, they are significantly suppressed. And it also activates mast cells and promotes the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, including things like IL-6, IL-17, and TNF-alpha, all of which are implicated in autoimmune disease activity. And this is why the standard immune-suppressing medications that are used in autoimmune diseases, so things like steroids and biologics and disease-modifying drugs, work in the short term, but don't address that ongoing physiological driver. That's not to say the medications are wrong, just that it's not the only piece of the puzzle. The medications reduce the immune activity, but if the stress hormones are still producing the same pro-inflammatory, tolerance-suppressing immune cell behavior, the system is continuously working against the treatment. So like we said, this is not an argument against medication. These medications matter and they save quality of life. This is an argument for adding in the adrenal stress piece to the clinical picture, into your care. Because without it, you are treating the expression of the problem rather than one of the primary drivers. So next, let's look at what this looks like in real patients. Let's have a look at some clinical stories. And I want to share three clinical stories with you today. And obviously names and identifying details have been changed. We're doing this anonymously. But these are patterns of real patients that I've seen in clinic. And I share them because the research, as I've just described, it has a way of feeling a little bit abstract sometimes and quite confusing. And it can really help to actually see it in a person. So the first patient, let's call her Sarah. Sarah came to me with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. She was diagnosed 3 years before we first spoke. She was already taking her levothyroxine and her TSH was in range. And her endocrinologist was satisfied with her management. But she wasn't satisfied. She wasn't satisfied with how she was feeling. She was exhausted in a way that didn't match her numbers. Her hair was still thinning. She was cold all the time. And her antibody levels, the TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies, were remaining persistently high. And she'd done some private testing, some at-home private testing to monitor them because she couldn't get that through the NHS. When we looked at her history, the picture was immediately striking. She'd been diagnosed in a year following the breakdown of a long-term relationship, and a redundancy had happened around a similar sort of time. She'd never connected those events to her diagnosis. So she understood her Hashimoto's as a genetic condition. Her mother had had it, so that was the framework that she'd been given. And the genetic piece is real, but genes are not destiny. And the research on Hashimoto's onset consistently shows that stressful life events are among the strongest environmental triggers in genetically susceptible individuals. So you have to have the genetics, but those genes can stay switched off without an environmental trigger, stress being an environmental trigger. So when we mapped the timeline, the picture was clear. When we addressed that stress physiology in her, we found she'd got a really flattened cortisol curve. She'd got depleted magnesium and B vitamins. Her gut picture as well had deteriorated. So we ran a stool test and there was, you know, probably over years of stress. We didn't have a previous one, so we could only go off what we had from her history. But probably over a period of years, that gut health picture had also deteriorated. As we worked on these things, so as we worked on that cortisol curve, we balanced out some of her nutrient deficiencies and we worked on the health of her gut. Her antibody levels began to fall. And quite sustainably as well. I mean, they always fluctuated slightly, but they fell and they were significantly lower from where they were when we started working together. And they sustained that lower level. And that's really important. That was the first time that happened since her diagnosis. She'd never been offered this piece of the picture before. So nobody had connected these life events to her biology. And that's really important. So let's take a look at the second patient. Let's call her Miriam. So Miriam had lupus and she had it for 6 years when we met. She was under the care of a rheumatologist and she was on hydroxychloroquine and she managed it, as she described it, relatively well. She thought she was doing reasonably well, except for some flares, which came, in her words, unpredictably. And when they did come, they were pretty devastating to her. So she felt like she was managing reasonably well most of the time. But when the flares came, they were pretty bad and she couldn't see any pattern for why the flares happened. When the flares happened, she was having things like joint pain, profound fatigue, really bad, lots of skin involvement as well. So her skin really suffered. And she'd learned to identify some dietary triggers, but the flares that frightened her the most were the ones where she really couldn't predict them or explain them. She took things out of the diet, but it didn't really help. So over the course of our work together, and of course, we looked at diet, we looked at lifestyle, we worked on all these things, we specifically found which dietary triggers were causing her a problem. Yes, we did all of that work. But over the course of our work together, pattern emerged that she had not previously articulated clearly. And that was that the flares that felt unpredictable actually weren't unpredictable at all. They followed a specific template. And that was a period of sustained high demand. So not major stressors. And this is why she didn't pick up on the pattern. Not some kind of catastrophic acute stressor. There wasn't a big breakup. There wasn't anything really going on in her life. There was just sustained pressure. So when we really dug into her history, we found periods where she would be able to say, oh, I was working on a certain project at work that was quite intense. She didn't see it as stressful, but maybe just more intense. And because she didn't see it as stress, she hadn't linked it to what was going on. But this happened almost every time she could remember having a flare. And there were probably some that she couldn't remember because she hadn't kept a diary through that time. But the ones that she could remember, every time we looked at that, when we really dug into that history, there was something going on that was intense or sustained pressure, but not what she classed as a significant stressful event. And this is a pattern that I see repeatedly, and it does have a physiological explanation. So during that sustained stress or pressure, whatever you want to call it, cortisol is elevated and is suppressing the inflammatory immune response. When the stress lifts and the cortisol drops, that suppression is removed. The immune system, which has been held in check, activates. The flare is not caused by the relief. It's caused by the dysregulated immune response that the stress has been masking. For Miriam, understanding this was really transformative, not because it changed her medication. It didn't change that treatment that she was on, but it changed her relationship to her condition. She wasn't just having these random, unexplained attacks that really kind of frightened her. They worried her. She could see a pattern and she knew there was a mechanism. And there were things that we could do about that, specifically around adrenal support and evening out those cortisol transitions that she was having, building in recovery, building in more tolerance, more immune tolerance. making sure that we protected her before a crash rather than after it. And that really began to reduce the severity and the frequency of those flares in a way that the medical management alone had not achieved. The third patient I want to talk to you about, let's call him David. And I include David deliberately because autoimmune disease is significantly more common in women. And the conversation around stress and immunity can inadvertently feel like a bit of a women's health topic sometimes, and it's not. Even though more women have autoimmune disease than men, this still happens in men. And that's why I want to bring this patient into it. David had ankylosing spondylitis, which is an autoimmune condition that affects the spine and the joints. And he'd been managing it with physiotherapy, with anti-inflammatories, and you know, for years he'd been doing really well. And he'd had this for a long time by the time he came to me. He was a high-performing professional in a very high-demand industry, working very long hours, and he entirely compartmentalized his stress as something totally separate from his physical health. In his words, "I work in finance, everyone is stressed, it's just the job." And that was what he said. That's how he compartmentalized what was going on. But the pattern in his history was stark. His diagnosis had come in a year following the loss of his father. He'd also had a significant professional setback in that year. And his worst flares were the ones that really took him off work for days with lots of pain and lots of stiffness, but they were also mapped precisely to his most pressured professional periods. And David was really resistant initially to the idea that stress was a piece of this clinical priority. He'd been told that his condition was a genetic autoimmune process, and he'd just accepted that as the framework. The idea that his cortisol curve, his gut integrity, the stress response, the HPA axis were relevant to the joint disease just didn't feel right to him. And it really took time to get this over to him. And it really took showing him the actual mechanism, the same mechanisms that I've walked you through today, for him to actually engage with it. But when he did, when we addressed the adrenal picture, the gut immune axis, the inflammatory load, the results were real and measurable. Not a cure, not getting rid of this condition, but substantial reduction in flare frequency, in pain severity, and when the flares happened, the ability to be able to continue on with his life and his work. And that was what was so important to him. So that's what this picture looks like in an actual patient, in your actual body. And you probably recognize yourself in some of those stories. What I want to address now is something directly, because I think it is the point where this conversation most often goes wrong. And this is when a doctor says to a patient with an autoimmune condition, "You need to manage your stress." They are saying something true. They're saying the right thing. The evidence we've just reviewed makes that case really compelling. Stress is a primary driver of autoimmune disease activity. It's just a fact. Reducing physiological stress load is going to improve the outcomes. It's a fact. That's not wrong. But the sentence, "You need to manage your stress," is inadequate. And it's inadequate in three specific ways that I want to run through with you today. So first, it treats stress as a psychological problem rather than a physiological one. Manage your stress implies that the solution is a mindset shift. And we've talked about this before, but this is so important with autoimmune conditions. It implies that better work-life balance, yoga, mindfulness, all of these things, and they're not without value, they are very good. And the evidence for these mindfulness-based interventions on inflammatory markers is genuine, it's there. But they address the input to the stress response system. They don't address the chronic stress that has already done to the physiology. So they're looking at the stress response system and they're helping to manage that, but they are not looking at physiologically what chronic stress has done to you. So they're missing pieces of the puzzle. Things like the gut lining that has been compromised over years of elevated cortisol. That's not going to heal because you start meditating. The depleted magnesium and B vitamins, they're not going to replenish because you reduce your working hours. The dysregulated HPA axis doesn't just reset because you take a holiday. And all these things are good. You know, meditating, reducing work hours, taking a holiday, all great, but they are not dealing with everything. These are the physiological consequences of the chronic stress, and they require physiological intervention, targeted nutrients, gut repair, inflammatory load reduction, circadian rhythm support, alongside whatever stress reduction practices you want to adopt. So alongside the yoga, the mindfulness, the work-life balance, all of those things, they are all good. They all have value. But that sentence, "You need to manage stress," leads us to believe that those things are all that you need to do. But they are one part of the puzzle. They are missing the physiological part of stress, and that's really important. Second, that sentence of "you need to manage your stress," it's ignoring the stress that the illness itself generates. So there is a particular cruelty in telling someone with an autoimmune condition to manage their stress, because living with an autoimmune condition in itself is a significant physiological and psychological stressor. The pain, the fatigue, the unpredictability, the impact on work, on relationships, and on identity, these are genuine stressors that activate the HPA axis continuously. And this means the stress-autoimmunity relationship is bidirectional in the clinical picture, in a way that's very rarely acknowledged. Stress drives autoimmune activity. Autoimmune activity drives HPA activation. HPA activation drives more autoimmune activity. You cannot resolve this by simply telling a patient to manage the original stress better, because the condition itself has become a stress driver. This is why the adrenal support piece matters so much. Not as stress management in the conventional sense, but as a direct physiological support for a system that is being continuously taxed by the condition itself. And third, manage your stress places the responsibility on the patient without giving them the mechanism. Manage your stress without explaining how stress affects their condition, without a physiological framework, without specific interventions, is a direction without a map. And for a patient who is already doing everything they can, it can often land as a criticism, an implication, but that they're just not trying hard enough, they're not doing enough, that their condition is somehow their own fault. And that's not acceptable. And it's not what the science supports either. The science supports a specific, mechanistic, actionable case for treating the stress physiology as primary clinical priority in autoimmune disease. Not a lifestyle recommendation, but a clinical intervention. So what does that actually look like? It looks like the adrenal piece that we covered in the last episode of this. It looks like blood sugar stabilization, nutrient replenishment, circadian rhythm support, HPA axis assessment. It looks like the gut piece from two episodes ago. The 4R framework, addressing gut permeability, supporting the microbiome. It looks like directly reducing inflammatory load through omega-3 fatty acids, polyphenol-rich nutrition, anti-inflammatory dietary patterns. And if you haven't listened to the last two episodes yet, we'll link those in the show notes below so you can go back and have a listen. It looks like whatever stress reduction practices are sustainable and effective for you as an individual, not as a cure, but as a meaningful input reduction into a system that's already under significant load. So breath work, movement, nature exposure, meaningful social connection, all of these things have a measurable effect on inflammatory markers and HPA axis regulation. They're not soft, they're clinical. They're not the whole picture, they're part of it. The goal is not the elimination of stress. We all come up against stress. The goal is a physiological system that is resilient enough to handle the stress that is unavoidable, because you have given it the biological support that it needs to function. Now, I said at the start of this episode that in all the years I've been practicing functional medicine, I have never seen an autoimmune case where stress was not part of the story. And I want to be clear about what I mean by that and what I don't mean. I do not mean that stress causes autoimmune disease in a simple, direct, one-to-one relationship. Autoimmunity is complex. Genetics matter. Infections matter. Gut health matters. Toxin exposures matter. Environmental triggers matter. Nobody develops an autoimmune condition solely because they were stressed. What I do mean is this: chronic stress dysregulation is a primary physiological driver of immune miscalibration. It opens the gut to triggers it should not be permeable to. It directly modulates immune cell behavior in pro-inflammatory and tolerance-undermining directions. It is present consistently, demonstrably, measurably in the clinical picture of autoimmune disease, and it is consistently under-addressed in conventional autoimmune care. If you have an autoimmune condition, you are managing the immune manifestation without addressing the stress physiology that's driving it. You're doing really important work, you're just not doing complete work. And that's not a criticism, it's what the evidence says. And it means there is more available to you that you can do than what you may have already been told. So the question I want you to sit with this week is this: if you have an autoimmune condition, or if you're supporting somebody who has an autoimmune condition, when was the last time the stress physiology was looked at in depth? Not are you stressed, but what does the HPA axis look like? What's that cortisol curve doing? Do you know what your cortisol curve is doing? What's the gut integrity look like? What is the inflammatory load? When was the last time these things were addressed? Those are the questions that open the door to a more complete picture. Everything I've covered today, the stress immune mechanisms, the HPA axis, the gut connection, is all part of an integrated framework in Optimal You. If you want to read more, you can get the book. We'll link the book in the show notes below this episode. And we also have the Optimal You 7-Day Reset. This is a practical first step for anyone who wants to begin addressing the physiological foundations we've been discussing. It's designed to be done at home in a week at a level that is genuinely sustainable, and for the launch price of £7.99. We'll also link that in the show notes below. Next Monday, we're going to stay on this topic, one of the most practically useful episodes of the month next week. We're going to look into what normal bloods actually means, what normal blood results actually look like in functional medicine, why NHS rate reference ranges and optimal function are not the same thing, which markers are most commonly missed, and what to ask for at your next GP appointment. So if you've ever been handed a results printout and told that everything is fine, or maybe not handed a printout and told everything is fine, when you know that it isn't, next week's episode is going to be for you. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it. Share this episode with someone who needs to hear it, and I'll see you next Monday. You've been listening to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner and author of Optimal You. You can find me at goodhealth.uk, that's G-O-O-D-E, health.uk, on Instagram at Good Health Clinic, G-O-O-D-E, Health Clinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. Show notes and all resources are linked below. I'll see you next week.